As we move into a new year, people naturally reflect on their health. But what does health really mean? Our personal definition of healthy is shaped by psychology, lived experience, and social context. Taking time to understand how you define health can be a powerful foundation for your long-term well-being. If I asked an athlete, a teenager, a mom, and a grandparent what healthy means, each of their answers would look completely different. Their bodies, their needs, and their lived experiences are all unique. And even knowing this, it's so easy to lose track of our own definition of health. In today's episode, I'm back with psychotherapist and CEO of Shift Collab, Megan Rafuse. She's here to help me break down how our understanding of health and body image has evolved and why redefining health for yourself is such an essential part of well-being. I want to acknowledge how emotional this topic can be for listeners, even triggering for some people. A lot of messaging that we get about nutrition automatically goes to weight loss or shrinking yourself or removing things and taking things out. But today, we're going to reframe that. Nutrition education should also focus on how food makes you feel. That means energy, comfort, blood sugar stability, and even emotional steadiness. To me, health is a whole person experience. As we jump into this episode, I invite you to approach this conversation with curiosity rather than self-criticism. We've got your back. To start, I want to hear Megan's thoughts on how she defines healthy and how that definition has shifted across generations. I'm so inspired by the work that we did in our last episode about gentle goal setting and finding your support systems and asking yourself the right question. And today we're exploring a topic that is really personal for so many listeners, how we define health and how that definition shapes how we see our bodies. So to start us off, I'd love to hear about your work in mental health and how that has influenced the way that you think about what healthy truly means.
I am so excited for this conversation. From the standpoint of, I wish I heard these conversations when I was younger. I needed these conversations. And throughout the last 15 years, my work in mental health has made it impossible to define healthy the way that we, especially as women, but for everyone in society, has been taught to define it. I have sat with people over the years who do every single thing society labels as healthy. The workouts, the tracking, the clean eating, the exercise, the measuring everything, the steps, and yet they're anxious, they're burnt out, they're overwhelmed, and they're terrified of slipping. I've also sat with people in all kinds of different bodies who feel deeply connected to themselves, they're steady, and they're well. And so for me, healthy is no longer a specific look or a number. It is fully tied to your relationship with yourself. It's whether you can notice your needs. It's whether you can listen to the cues your body is giving you and appropriately respond to those cues. And so when it comes to health, we really can't ignore the outside influences. So much of this work around health is like full of these shoulds, these I should be better, I shouldn't eat that, I should do this. It comes from diet culture, it comes from our family, it comes from social media. And we know that those messages in reality only contribute to self-judgment and shake our sense of self-worth versus actually encouraging us to be healthy.
It's such a great point. I want to talk about cultural messaging and social media messaging. But before that, I think we should back up and talk about what a lot of us, maybe millennials, maybe a little older or younger, have been living through. I mean, we've always had some form of diet culture. Of course, it was existing in the 70s and 80s and much, much longer before. But within even the 90s, I'm just remembering like Atkins, South Beach, then we moved to keto and paleo. A lot of these are they are low carb to very low carb. They're very specific. I would call them quite restrictive. And then we've also got different celebrity diets. So-and-so's doing this or this. And if you do this, you'll look like this. So I'm interested in how those early messages that a lot of us had their whole lives shape who we are now.
100%. And I'm an elder millennial. I lived through this. And each generation has their own messaging that is tied to health and diet culture that really becomes the background music of adulthood. For many of us who grew up in the 90s, it was filled with rules. No carbs, no fat. Smaller is better. All of that equals discipline. I'm honestly still confused about butter. Can I eat butter? Is butter good or bad? I don't know. I do eat butter. But what happens is I take out the butter and there's this like message on repeat. I didn't frame that message for myself. This message is the background music around food. I see it often. So I am a mom now. I have a son who's 4.5. I have a daughter who's 16 months. And I started to notice certain comments that were made around me as I'm starting to think about how is the messaging, especially around food, shaping their lived experience. And so I went out to dinner with friends recently and I started noticing when the bread basket arrives at the table, there is often like this feeling of anxiety. And I feel someone say like, oh, well, I'm not eating bread. If that's for your health, awesome. But I also feel this internal judgment when someone takes the piece of bread, puts it on their plate and says like, oh, I'll just eat it. I'll just eat bad this one time. And that internalized shame of bread is just bread. It doesn't have to have this emotional weight, but it does because as a society, we've been taught this. When I went through 2 pregnancies, I felt it myself. Despite growing a human in my body, I was so hard on myself because my weight was going up. And a lot of women, instead of saying, I feel powerful, I feel strong, I'm growing a human, I'm nourishing my body, we say, oh, I should be smaller. I can't wait to get back to my pre-pregnancy weight. There's this pressure to bounce back. I see it in the veiled comments about healthy and clean eating. I see it all over my social media. I often see this orthorexia or disordered eating showing up as like, oh, well, I'm eating clean. Everyone should eat clean like me. And so different generations really do carry these different rules. Gen X grew up with aggressive diet culture. Millennials grew up with clean eating. Gen Z is navigating this perfection through social media. But the theme is honestly the same.
And we know that maternal diet behavior and messaging to children like strongly influences them, especially females, but both, of course.
Yes, they're watching us.
I want to dive more into that. You made me think of 3 things, though. One is we should define orthorexia. Do you want to define it and how you see it show up?
Yeah, so typically how I see orthorexia show up is it is an obsession with restricting and control. So what I tend to see is that orthorexia can be celebrated. I've had clients come into my practice where they say, my friends don't know that I'm working out 7 hours a day, that my obsession with food and fitness is problematic to the point where it's impacting my functioning. And I think it's really important to name that because the perception can be that someone is healthy because they're working out a lot or they're eating clean. And what I want to acknowledge is that disordered eating behaviors, it can be easy to celebrate because it's being perceived as health promoting behaviors. And in reality, we need to be mindful of how we comment on people's bodies, how we comment on them working out, because we don't know if we're actually validating an unhealthy behavior. So the way that I really support clients in managing how we're talking about our own bodies and other people's bodies is to look at what messaging am I giving? Am I saying, wow, you've lost weight? Or am I saying, you look like you're glowing. What are you doing to nourish yourself? Those are the different types of messaging that I think is really critical to embody because when we comment on people's bodies, we may unknowingly be perpetuating unhealthy behaviors.
Yeah, orthorexia is more prevalent than people think, and it can be all around us. I was doing a presentation the other day, and so I pulled some research on that eating disorder, and it shows up really strongly in cancer care. And then it also is really prevalent in new moms, which is not super surprising to me. So it's a fixation on healthy eating, which turns into restriction. It's not because of body image like anorexia nervosa. It is fear of food and or perfectionism tendencies with food. So I'm glad that we're talking about that because it really fits into this cultural and social media messaging that we're getting.
Totally. You know, postpartum and post-cancer diagnosis are both times of immense grief of the loss of your sense of identity as you were. And it is a loss of control over your body. And how do we gain control back is we focus on what we can control, which is our intake, which is our relationship to food, which is all of those measurables that we talked when it comes to health and fitness.
It's such a great point. And I wish more people knew that those are risky times for getting into this, I would call trap of perfectionistic behavior that can lead to disordered behavior.
Oh my gosh. Honestly, postpartum for me was so difficult because when I was scrolling on social, the algorithm knew that I'm a new mom. So not only was I getting, you know, new mom content, I was getting video after video of how I bounced back quickly after baby, how I got my body back 6 weeks after baby. All of these examples of what I should be, there's very little, hey, let's just buy bigger jeans. Let's just buy clothes that fit us better because you are in the trenches of full capacity raising a tiny human. I wish I learned in like my prenatal classes is, hey, you can unsubscribe, you can unfollow because you are going to be receiving messages about your body and your body feels completely not like yours.
Yes, 100%. And I want to loop back to social media, but something that you said reminded me of a very interesting week that I had a little while ago. I was talking to one client and she said, I've gained weight. I'm so upset and I refuse to buy new clothes. There's no way. I can't afford it. Absolutely not. I have to lose weight. So we had this whole conversation. And then the next day I had somebody that had lost weight and was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I get to buy a new wardrobe. And it just like struck me so strongly. I was like, we cannot, will not, can't afford buying larger clothes. But if we have the opportunity to buy smaller clothes, it's this huge celebration. The difference there was so shocking and striking. And it just made me realize the messages that we get and that we tell ourselves regarding changing size of body happens many times during our lives.
Totally. Something that one of my friends did that in hindsight, she must have seen that I was struggling postpartum, but she said, let me come over and help you clean out your closet. I had a lot of clothes that didn't fit me. I was feeling kind of isolated in my postpartum. And she came over, we went, tried on every item of clothing in my closet. She was there for like half day. And we put away in this bin all the clothes that didn't fit me anymore. And she said, look, we are going to label this bin with the date of your son's first birthday. You get to decide at that time if you want any of these clothes, if you don't want any of these clothes. Maybe these clothes won't even be in style by the time a year passes. And she said, that is when you get to open this bin and decide if you want to keep them. And the act of just removing all of that emotional weight, it was all emotionally laden feelings around, I'm not good enough, these don't fit, I'm not in control, my body has changed, I dealt with a really difficult pregnancy with lots of health complications. And it moved that like narrative in my mind every time I went from the closet. It put that narrative in the box and it let the box go in the basement. And on that date, I didn't open the box. I think I waited like 6 more months. I opened the box. I went through all the clothes and I was like, nope, I'm going to donate these. It allowed me to realize that, hey, I actually outgrew that box of clothes. I outgrew that narrative that I needed to fit into them. And I felt so relieved just to let it go. And I'm forever grateful for her. And I didn't need to do that after my second kid. I might need to do it in the future. And I have the skill now to say, we don't need to be keeping clothes because they have a number on a tag. We need to make sure that clothes are something that can allow us to feel confident versus define our sense of worth. Those are not the same thing. We don't get to let some piece of fabric define if we're worthy and some number. We define that and then we pick out our clothes aligned with already feeling good enough.
I've been following 2026 trends and I've seen several times that getting rid of old clothes or clothes that you wish you could wear again is actually a trend for 2026. So I hope this is inspiring folks to take a lead from your great advice.
Oh my gosh, I love this. Maybe I have to do it again. But honestly, the best thing I can say is bring a friend. Tell the friend what you're struggling with. Invite them over. Say, let's have an afternoon. We'll have some coffee and chill and go through my closet. Maybe you return the favor. Because also your friend will just be really honest with you. Ask your friend to be honest. And I think that bonding with my friend also was awesome because now my friend checks in and says, hey, you signed up for a personal trainer. Are you still going? When we're vulnerable with the people in our lives, it opens up the door for them to be able to support us in the way that we actually need. And that takes courage. That takes being open. But we often think, well, I don't want to ask for help or I'm going to burden that person. Instead, I want you to think, well, what a gift it is to let my friend in closer so they can really know me, we can deepen the friendship, and then they know how to support me instead of trying to figure it out on their own. I always love when friends are vulnerable with me. And this diet culture conversation I'm seeing come up at more conversations and more events I'm at with friends, we're starting to name and normalize how that has impacted our view of ourselves and how we're trying to unlearn what we have learned. And at the same time, not blaming my mom for what she learned from society. Instead, I'm thinking how hard that must have been for her too.
This episode is brought to you by Orgain. Juggling life's demands while trying to stay mindful about what you eat deserves some kind of medal. And that's where Orgain's organic protein powder plus metabolism blend comes in. Each serving gives you 21 grams of complete plant-based protein with all 9 essential amino acids, plus a good source of fiber to help you feel satisfied. It also includes chromium, a key mineral that supports metabolic health and helps your body use carbohydrates more efficiently. It's made with just 1 gram of sugar and a thoughtful blend of organic ingredients like green coffee bean extract. You can find it at orgain.com. How do we start to reframe how we see our bodies and, just as importantly, how we nourish them? I often ask my clients to name how food choices feel. Does this help me feel steady? Should I really be intermittent fasting? Am I energized? Do I need comfort? We need to look at that complexity instead of just, is this food good or bad? I almost always work with people on building meals around satisfaction and stability. That means a protein, some carbohydrates, including fiber and fat, in addition to what you enjoy. So much more important than restricting foods or even punishing yourself through food or not eating. For example, I'm constantly setting goals with people around adding in a carbohydrate source at dinner, maybe some quinoa, some sweet potato, some brown rice, because I find this is an area where a lot of people end up restricting, and then they're hungry or unsatisfied after their evening meal. If you want to do the work of shifting the way you view your body or your relationship to food, it's really hard to do it entirely on your own. You're going to need people in your corner. People who cheer you on, ground you, and remind you of who you are when old narratives get loud. You also might need experts on your team, like a great therapist and/or a dietitian to help you. So next, I wanted to ask Megan about her take on comparison culture too. now we're having this, can I call it an issue with social media? It's playing a really big role in the messaging of what is healthy. We've got wellness optimization going on. We have biohacking. So I'd be interested in how you feel about comparison culture and how that affects body image and self-worth.
Oh my gosh, comparison culture convinces you that there is one correct way to be in a body, and that is optimized, sculpted, monitored, upgraded. And the problem with optimization is that it turns your body into this never-ending project. No amount of progress ever feels like enough because there's always new and novel and better ways to keep optimizing. So the antidote to this isn't pretending that you don't compare yourself. We all compare ourselves. It's a normal function. It's intervening in your train of thought before comparison becomes a thief of your own self-worth. So here's what I use with clients. I say, let's name this trigger. We are scrolling. We are seeing, you know, a friend we went to high school with has done something and they're optimizing and they look really good. And in reality, my life isn't Jennifer's. So I need to name that this is triggering me. It is triggering me based on the lens that I see my world through. It is triggering me based on the beliefs I have about myself, and it likely has nothing to do with Jennifer. I then want to shift to curiosity. Why does this image or why does seeing Jennifer do these things make me feel less than? This isn't a zero-sum game. Jennifer can succeed without it meaning that I'm failing. So in that moment, I'm also going to remind myself that I need to reconnect with my own body. Am I breathing? You know, how many of us hold our breath all day and walk around with our shoulders up and constantly live in this high stress, cortisol fueled feeling of ambition? Why did my mood just shift and what is happening in my body? And then I'm going to decide how I respond to that. So I might limit my input. You know what? I might just unfollow Jennifer. She doesn't need to know, but I know that when I'm looking at Jennifer, I feel inadequate. So that's not healthy for me. I'm just going to unfollow her. I can't build a healthy sense of self-image when I am looking at someone else's version of perfection that we know is the highlight reel. Our brain can't compute still. There's lots of studies around this, that social media is someone else's curated highlight reel. Our brain assumes this is reality. And so it's my job to limit my input and look for healthier ways to find motivation around changes that I want to make rather than leading from a place of emptiness or unworthiness or I'm not going to measure up. If we set a goal based on that, based on punishment, we are not going to complete our goal because it is based on a feeling of lacking versus a feeling of worthiness.
How do you guide people then towards making choices that support their internal experience rather than this external experience, expectations, or comparison?
I typically encourage people to get really good at understanding your own thoughts. So I say, like, you know, when you notice this happening, what were you thinking? Like, what were you thinking right before your mood changed? Underneath these kind of comparison patterns is often our own pain and shame. So we know that when we fall into these cycles and when we notice it impacting our mood, it's because we're viewing it through a lens by which we're seeing the world. So for example, I love this glasses analogy when I think about core beliefs. So every day I wake up in the morning and I have a pair of glasses next to my bed and I have to put them on to get through my day. And on the lenses of my glasses is written my core belief. So this belief that I have about myself that's been wired based on feedback I've received throughout my life. I wake up in the morning, put on my glasses. My lens says I'm not good enough. I pick up my phone and start scrolling. I see that, you know, my work colleague just ran a half marathon. Instead of feeling excited for that colleague, I'm looking through the lens of I'm not good enough. It is going to start strengthening my belief that I'm not good enough is getting bolder on my lens. Then I go for lunch with my coworkers and, you know, maybe my coworker is talking to the person next to them the whole time instead of me. It's going to validate the I'm not good enough. We go through our lives with a belief that we have about ourselves and we look for evidence inadvertently and unconsciously that will validate that belief. So what I do is I say, hey, what if we could just take those glasses off for 5 minutes? Give me some other reasons why that coworker maybe was talking to the person next to them instead of you at lunch. What could be the other evidence? I want you to start thinking about, how am I dismantling this belief? And looking at what is causing me pain. So if I'm comparing, am I feeling like, oh, well, I have a fear of taking up space, but look at this person showcasing their life and taking up a lot of space. So maybe instead of comparing, my real inner work is working on where does this fear come from? How can I put myself out there, do some behavioral experiments and see if it's actually that bad and start to rebuild the messages that I'm giving myself? Comparison is always going to be there. I think it's really important that we define envy versus jealousy. Jealousy comes from a lack. Oh, I wish I had what they had. Oh, I must not be good enough. Envy comes from, oh, I wish I could do that. And I'm really excited for them too. And so I think our goal here is really to say, we live in a world where social media isn't going anywhere, but we get to decide how we use it as a tool. And we get to do the deep inner work of recognizing where our own beliefs about ourselves, our own emotions are robbing us of interacting with this tool and the people on the other end of the tool who we could probably forge better relationships with if we weren't coming at this from a belief around ourselves that is tied to lacking. And honestly, we know the mental health impacts of social media is really negative. So beyond building your inner skills, I actually encourage people to limit their intake. Limit that social media intake. See if you feel better.
Right. And you've talked a lot about unfollowing, which I recommend to my clients a lot. And I appreciate the bridge from social media and the challenges that we face to internal monologue. But I'm also interested in the language that we use externally. You've talked a little bit about being a mom and influence on children and influence on friends at a dinner table. Tell me more about that.
This one is a big one. I feel this immense responsibility to shape like the next generation because I have children who are growing up in that generation. And so language really shapes our identity. It is important that we're reclaiming language. So instead of, oh, I hate my belly, we might instead say, oh, my belly feels bloated today. And I'm noticing that. Kids learn how to talk about their bodies by listening to us talk about ours. My son is 4.5. He's already noticing differences. So he's talking about different bellies, different skin, different hair, different abilities. And he's putting voice to these differences. And I'm actually really enjoying seeing his curiosity. I don't have the perfect answers. Sometimes he asks something and I'm like, oh gosh, like what do I say to that? But what I have to remember is that even though I won't have the perfect words to reply every single time, what he's really looking at is my reaction to his questions and the way that I interact with my own body. So if I'm talking about my body with disgust, or I'm talking about the size, or like, oh, my jeans don't fit, or oh, I don't look good, he learns that bodies are something to judge. If I talk about it with gratitude, I start to notice that he mirrors me. So I say, oh, my legs were so strong today. They helped me run after you at the park. So he's learning that bodies are functional. He learns that bodies are purposeful. They're varied and every body is worthy. We talk a lot about consent and also a lot about noticing cues. So this past week, we've talked about hunger and we talk about, well, is his belly telling him he feels full? Does his belly tell him he needs more food? I think a lot of us were raised on that, like, clean your plate. And I'm really working hard to help him understand his own body cues. So I want him to have health literacy. I think a lot of this conversation is about that literacy to talk about what we're feeling in our body and in our mind, and then the skill building to manage those feelings effectively.
Bodies change throughout our whole lives. And for some reason, that's not a part of our cultural conversation. We have weight fluctuations, aging, we have shifting hormone patterns. And we talk a lot about women's health here on the Good Clean Nutrition podcast, including menopause and perimenopause. How do you approach these changes and this conversation with your clients?
I remind them that bodies are living systems. They are not sculptures. They respond to stress, sleep, hormones, mental illness, aging, grief, seasons of life, and all of those thousand tiny demands that we're always carrying. And when I've brought it up this way, I actually visibly see clients' shoulders go down because we often expect this, like, I need to be a sculpture and everything is consistent and the same. And that is just not the reality of being a living being, an organism who will experience change. So I encourage people to lead with curiosity. What is my body responding to right now? What does my body need? I may be having hot flashes or experiencing immense exhaustion, or I might be someone who's really struggling with endometriosis or pain. And I need to think about what is my body needing in this moment, and how am I going to respond to that without judgment? Judgment will shut us down from giving our body what we need. It'll stop us from being kind to ourselves and leading with self-compassion. And so much of this work comes down to reframing our inner monologues. It's also asking for support. So we can't negate that the systems that we live in, our workplaces, are like everything that we do as women, we can't negate that these systems weren't built for us. And so part of these conversations around periods and perimenopause and menopause and fertility and pregnancy has to be happening in the systems that we spend our time in. I am loving that more of these conversations are happening in the workforce. These are major health years are during our major career years.
I talk to a lot of clients that are wishing I can have my body back pre-pregnancy, pre-illness, pre-surgery. And I really love to reframe, like, what if we can't and we can't? What if we can't go back and we need to look at how we move forward? I want to give you an opportunity to really, like, bring it home with a final message. If someone listening today is feeling maybe emotionally overwhelmed by this topic, what grounding message or first step do you want them to really hold on to?
If you're feeling overwhelmed or you're flooded right now listening to this, I want you to be kind to yourself. This isn't about, like, suddenly you need to take instant action or it's a full overhaul of your relationship with your body. You don't have to fix anything. You just have to start with asking yourself, what part of me needs support right now? Maybe it's your nervous system. Maybe it's your self-talk. Maybe it's getting more sleep. So I want you to just really focus on choosing the smallest response that will meet that need. That's how we start to make change. If you're overwhelmed, you're not going to be able to change everything at once, nor should you. So just reconnect with yourself in one small, doable way. And that alone counts as meaningful change and will get you on the path toward feeling better.
I love that. And if you really need some support and you know that you need support in one of these specific areas, maybe you need a great therapist or a great registered dietitian or both.
100%. We are here to support you with any change you want to make. And a dietitian and a therapist will sit with you and talk through these challenges with you. Yeah. We are your champion. So I know there's a lot of fear in reaching out for help, but honestly, let us be that champion, that guidepost to support you on your journey, because no one should do this alone, nor do you have to. We've got your back.
We do. We really do.
We do.
Actually, on that note, I wanted to answer your question about butter real quickly.
Yes, please.
My answer to anyone is diet culture has lied to us by telling us that there is an answer and that you just don't know it yet. Because if you come to me and you ask me about butter for you, I don't have an answer. I don't have a that's good or bad or like this is a secret answer. I need to know what is going on with you, your health goals, your family history. I really want to see your labs and know what's going on in your diet. So there's a level of personalization that you can't get on social media, that you can't ever know unless you're working with a trained expert. And so, Megan, someday you send me your labs and I'll tell you about butter and what that means for you, because it has got to be personalized.
I love this. And it also, you just validated that there is no perfect that someone else is going to give you. There is no secret that anyone else is hiding when it comes to your own wellness and health. It's personal.
I love that. This was the most meaningful conversation. A heartfelt thank you to Megan for joining me today. If there's one truth that rises to the surface after this conversation, it's that we have bodies that change, age, stretch, recover, learn, and carry us through life. And that is a profound privilege. Your body deserves respect, patience, and compassion. As you move through the rest of your week, I want to leave you with this reminder. Supporting your body doesn't mean shrinking in. Caring for yourself doesn't have to look like discipline or deprivation. Sometimes it simply means feeding yourself enough, resting when you're tired, or speaking to yourself with a little more kindness. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'll see you next time.